When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you don't have a clear curriculum for your classroom, it is so overwhelming to try to put that together yourself. Spending hours on Pinterest and Google, pulling worksheets and pulling pieces of curriculum together to make something that works for your classroom. That's why we created the Autism Helper curriculum and now offer Curriculum Access. Curriculum Access gets you access to all levels and all subjects of the highly differentiated, evidence-based Autism Helper curriculum. You can have students working on letter identification and working on parts of speech at the same time in our easy-to-use curriculum. We currently have hundreds of teachers using Curriculum Access from all over the world with consistently rave reviews. I want you to join that group of teachers. Now is the time to ask your administrators for Curriculum Access. We have an email template ready to go so you can ask them to set up a demo. Your administrators can jump on a live call with our team members to see everything that's included in the Autism Helper Curriculum Access. Next year, let's reduce the overwhelm. Let's start the year out with a path and a plan and resources to meet all the diverse needs of your students. Let's make next year the year of Curriculum Access. Head over to the show notes to learn more.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. I am super excited to share today's interview with you. I am chatting with Whitney Sarnowski from the Spectrum Compass. Whitney is a former special education teacher and soon to be BCBA. And today she's sharing her very personal and honest story of her son's autism diagnosis. Her son just turned 2. His name's Kyson. If you follow her on Instagram, you know he's absolutely adorable. And she goes through the process of the diagnosis with us. She shares kind of her perspective as a parent, and she says a few times what her mommy heart felt and her mommy gut, but also her head as an educator and as having a lot of background in ABA, she knew how important and critical early intervention was. So I love hearing the details of the diagnosis process and really how brave she was to push through and not be satisfied with the we'll wait and see model. She wanted to know right away if there was a diagnosis that it was what it was so she could move forward and get some therapy, get some treatment, and get some systems in place for him to start learning and growing. She has a great perspective and has developed an amazing community on her Instagram and blog. Her Instagram is The Spectrum Compass. You can go to her blog, thespectrumcompass.com. And she shares great tips for parents that are new to the autism world and are entering and going through this diagnosis process. She also shares some really user-friendly and approachable techniques that are ABA-based. And she's really trying to break down the stigma of ABA being something that's harsh or punishment-based. And she shares different strategies that she used with her son that as early as 6 months, using ABA with her 6-month-old son. So let's jump in and hear this conversation. Hi, Whitney. Thank you so much for joining us. I am really happy to have you today.
I am so happy to be here. I'm honored that you even reached out for me to be on your podcast. So thank you.
Well, I really love talking to parents of children with special needs because I feel like I always learn so much. And I love getting to talk to parents that are also educators and have the ABA background. It's like the best of everything in one spot. So I love that you are going to come to us today with a lot of different perspectives.
Yes. And I can't wait to talk about our journey with you. So
So you were a former classroom teacher, right? Special ed teacher?
Yep. So before I had my son, Kyson, I taught in a variety of settings, but my last teaching job was in a special needs room for kiddos who have autism. And those kiddos were just learning how to communicate, lots of self-help skills. We were working on like things like MANS and TACS and really just giving them a foundation of communicating with their peers, with their family, with teachers. And then I also, before that, worked in another autism classroom that we were focused more on the academic piece and, you know, getting them to access their general education curriculum and modifying where we needed to. So I've kind of worked across the board as far as working with individuals with autism, and I worked with younger kiddos. So that's kind of where my passion has always been. I have my teaching certificate in general elementary ed and special needs, which goes from 0 to I think 21. And then I just got so inspired by some of the BCBAs that I was working under at my last teaching job and decided to pursue my BCBA. So I have 300 hours left, and I am going to hopefully sit for my board certification in next January or February. So
it's always those dang hours, right?
Yes, it's well, and I was supposed to have them done before Kyson was born. Kyson came 5 weeks early, so that kind of just changed things a little bit. We slowed things down, and now that he has started school, I'm able to finish those last few hundred hours to become a BCBA, which is what my ultimate goal was.
Well, it's so amazing that even before you become a BCBA, you're going to have so much experience from the perspective of a parent. And also as a teacher, you'll bring both to the table.
Yes. And I think that's what it is unique about kind of my journey so far, is that I have that teaching experience. I have that passion, but I also now have a kiddo who has autism and a kiddo who benefits so much from the practice of ABA and a lot of the interventions that we do as BCBAs for kiddos for all needs, right? Like oftentimes I feel like ABA gets the rep of it only is for kiddos with autism, and like that is so not the case, right? Like it can be used across the board for all needs.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, my husband will say to me sometimes, he's like, are you using ABA on me right now? And I'm like, don't you worry about it. You just keep unloading that dishwasher.
Exactly, right? I know my husband, Justin, says the same thing. And it's funny, Justin has been on this journey with me all the way through my master's program. And so he has really learned the ins and outs of ABA.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about your son and about kind of the journey that you've got through? He's 3, right?
He just turned 2 on Friday. Oh.
Even littler than I thought.
Yes, he is a little, I mean, he's my little baby.
He is so cute, by the way.
Oh, thank you. He's cute, but man, he gives me a run for the money that I don't make as a mom. So Kyson came 5 weeks early, and he had decreased heart rate. So I went to the emergency room, and long story short, they did an emergency C-section. He came out screaming, healthy. He was obviously very little. He was 4 pounds, 9 ounces. And, but he didn't have to go to the NICU, which was a total blessing. So we stayed in the hospital for about a week together. We had to work on, you know, obviously getting him to eat and maintain his weight. And his the thing we struggled with mostly was his temperature. We had to keep his temperature at a certain degree. And so after about a week, they released us both. They kept me in the hospital mostly just so I could be with Kyson, which was very nice of them, because typically when you have a C-section, I think you leave after 2 or 3 days. So, and then it just kind of was hard. And I say that because Kyson, what started spitting up blood, we've always kind of struggled with his GI. Come to find out when he was 2 weeks old, he had a dairy intolerance. And fast forward to him turning one, we ended up going to an allergist, and he's 100% allergic to dairy. So he has an actual diagnosis of having a dairy allergy. So that was kind of the start of his GI issues. He had always been, constipated, and he had really bad silent reflux as an infant. And so those things added up when you have a premature baby and you're a new mom. It just all felt very overwhelming. And then Kyson, obviously he was going to be 5 weeks behind his developmental milestones. And our pediatrician administered the ASQ, and he always adjusted it by 5 weeks. So it really went to Kyson's developmental age. And so from there, we really started seeing some gaps, even with the adjusted age. So early on, Kyson was always kind of behind in his communication, in his gross motor, but his fine motor was always through the roof. Like, it was always kind of surpassed where he should be developmentally. So as an educator and as someone who has background in, childhood developmental milestones, I started seeing these interesting splinter skills. My very first warning sign for Kyson was the gap in his communication. I started to get really concerned, and then I started piecing together his developmental milestones with some of the GI issues that were happening with him very early on. As an infant, he was just uncomfortable in his own skin. He never was able to self-soothe. I always had to hold him straight up and down. He never was able to, cradle, rock in my arms. He always had to be horizontal on me. And sleep was just awful. He was about 9 months old, and he was up every 45 minutes during the night.
Oh my gosh.
Well, for a month straight. And it was that point where I was like, okay, something is going on. Like, I know babies don't sleep. I know, sometimes you have to sleep train babies. But this was like more than that. And so I started doing some digging and just keeping a really close eye on all of his developmental milestones that he should have been meeting. And by the time he turned one, he was still not saying mama or dada. And it was at his one-year-old birthday party, because, we went big. This mommy overdid it, just like all new moms do. And we had a wonderful, both sides of our family came, and it was so fun. But it wasn't fun for Kyson. And we spent most of his birthday upstairs where it was quiet. And so it was his first birthday that really solidified for me. I knew where it was headed. He was very easily overstimulated all of the time. We were never able to do car rides. He, hated being out of our house. And so we actually, after his first birthday, a month later, we had a really big move. We moved to Tennessee. And I knew that was going to come with some big transitions for Kyson. And sure enough, we had a really rough few months because it was all unknown. And I think it goes without saying, like, all kids, moves are going to be difficult no matter what, right? Like, especially at a young age. But Kyson needed predictability from a very young age. He needed his routine. If he didn't have that predictability piece, if he didn't have the routine, he would melt down. And to the point where you felt his emotion so much, like, I would start crying because he was so, like, devastated and just, not himself really. Mm-hmm. So we moved to Tennessee, and that is when I really started kind of pushing for some answers, because as you and I know, as educators, early intervention is everything. And so I was not about to let Kyson slip through the cracks. And I needed some answers. And so we started with a pediatrician who was lovely, but just wasn't the right fit for the answers that we were seeking. And so we ended up at a different pediatrician, and I came across Florida State University's First Words Project. And I don't know, do you know anything about that?
I don't. Can you tell us a little bit?
Yeah. So the First Words Project, you can just Google it. It is one of the best resources for all children 0 to 2 years old. Even if you're not concerned about your child at all, it's they do what's called the ESAC, and it's basically tracking communication, all of the developmental milestones. But the difference between the ESAC and the ASQ, which we were doing at our pediatrician's office, is it will give you some red flags, and not just red flags for autism, but red flags for communication disorders, language disorders. I think their research is starting to come out with some anxiety disorders in kiddos really young. And so it's all research based, but they have this online forum that parents can go in, fill out for free. Everything is free. And you obviously have to like sign a waiver saying, yes, I want to be a part of your research. But your names, nothing is shown through that. And so I did that, and I filled out the ESAC, and it came back. They process it, and then they have someone from their facility call you, and they say, okay, we analyzed your results. Would you like to know, do you want any further information? And I said, yes. And sure enough, Kyson had red flags for autism. And so from there, Florida.
How old was he at this point?
He was 18 months.
Okay.
So, and their research goes all the way through 2, because really their whole goal with this research is to basically provide a better ADOS for kiddos who are really young, to identify kiddos from as early as, I think, 6 months, to get them early intervention quicker instead of waiting, you know, until they're 2, 3, 4. So I was really passionate about that. We still are a part of their research. They're kind of following Kyson and his progress now that he's been diagnosed. But so anyways,
I have to say that's so great that you were so passionate about getting answers early, because it's really, I can't imagine, but it sounds really scary, and it's probably easier to live in the land of denial and we'll wait and see. That's like a safer, nicer place to stay versus let's just get it going, because if there are things we have to do, we need to start it now. So that's like incredibly brave of you to really kind of push through there at that time.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I have to say, so I initiated all of this. I actually didn't even tell Justin that I was filling out this ESAC. And when I was done, I told him, and he said, oh, like, you know, Kyson's fine. He's young. Everyone has those excuses, right? Like, mm-hmm. He's so young. He's a boy. He develops slower. Kids all develop at their own rates. But my mommy heart just knew. My mommy heart said, you need to look further into this. And so once I got those results back from Florida State, I had told Justin, like, hey, this is what they said. These are our next steps. And what's great about Florida State, A, everything is free, but B, they've been doing this research for so long that they have a great system. So once you get your ESAC results back, if your kiddo has red flags for autism or a communication disorder, they offer up further evaluation. And so we did in-home videos. We took an hour-long video of pieces of our day that we found concerning, that we thought like maybe this could help them piece together what we're seeing. And so we did that. They analyzed those videos. We had another Skype conversation. So now I'm face to face with the person who analyzed Kyson's videos, and she has a PhD in psychology. And she said, you know, like, yeah, some of this is concerning, but, and with Kyson, it's always been hard. Like, he's someone, he shows signs some of the time, but not all of the time. And so that's where we started to kind of get stuck as far as, well, do we diagnose him? We know we need interventions, but we also need insurance to take care of it. So, I started to struggle at this point. I struggled with, well, do we push for this label? Do we hold off and wait? And it was my husband, Justin, who said, we have to go through with this. We have to push and see what happens, because I would just started to get scared. Like you said, I was so brave. And there was that point as just being a mom that I lost all of my bravery, and Justin helped push me through that. And he said, you know, you don't ever want to look back and say, I wish I would have. And that's what I would tell other parents is, I've talked with many, many families who have held off on the diagnosis of their kid till they're, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. And they tell me, I wish I just would have known. I wish I would have just pushed when I thought something was off. And so, yeah, we pushed through, and Florida State really worked with us on trying to decipher if it was just a communication delay or disorder, or is it paired with autism? And so we waited another month. We resubmitted some videos, and by 20 months, when Kyson was 20 months old, we started seeing like some pretty significant behaviors. Like, he has started head banging a little bit, just more physical behaviors. And so I was able to record that and send it to Florida State. And they said, you know, let's do the ADOS on him. So with me being passionate about the, Florida State's First Words Project, we actually, because we live in Tennessee, so we actually were able to access. We flew down to Florida State, and the great thing about that is because it's research, you don't have to pay for it. So if there's any families out there that don't want to be on a wait list and want the ADOS for free, you can go through Florida State. It is becoming more popular now, so I think that they're starting a small wait list, but it's nothing comparative if you're going through like your pediatrician's office or a neurologist or something like that.
And at that time, you don't have time to chill on a wait list.
Exactly.
Like, then you're losing, you know, valuable days and years almost.
Totally. And that's where Justin and I were at. We're like, we would rather spend the little bit amount of money to get down there, fly down there, and just get it an answer rather than stay in Tennessee and be on a wait list for a year. So they did ADOS, and honestly, he presented like he was fine. Like, he transitioned fine. And I was worried at that point. I was like, well, great. Like, we're not going to get the diagnosis, and this trip was a waste of time. And I felt defeated. And that's Kyson for you. That's Kyson presents signs some of the time. And some of the times it's like, huh, all right. Like, you know, who are you right now? and so I had, my gut had told me that that would happen. And that's part of the reason why we also flew down to Florida State, because it wasn't just the ADOS. We had recorded our third round of in-home videos, which is really where we struggle with Kyson. And she said, I want to rewatch those videos. I want to take what I saw today during ADOS into consideration. And we filled out tons of parent surveys. Excuse me. And so they took all of that into consideration. And a few weeks later, she called me and she said, let's go through with the diagnosis, because the videos is really what showed her, yeah, this this isn't just a communication disorder. And so I personally feel like that should be a part of the autism diagnosis. And I hope that someday it will be, because I think that recording what's actually going on in home for some kiddos like Kyson, who might only present signs some of the time, is really important, because yeah, they might do okay with ADOS. And had we had not gone down to Florida State, I think that Kyson would probably still not be diagnosed, and we wouldn't be receiving the interventions that we are now.
And that makes so much sense, because even all kids, like if you're in a new environment, sometimes you act potentially, you have more behaviors, or sometimes you have less. You just kind of go with the flow because it's new and different. And you're like, okay, you know, so having that bigger picture and that full context, you're right, like does make so much sense.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the ADOS is a great tool. Obviously, like it is what diagnoses kids with autism, but it is hard to use it for really young kids like Kyson, because we went in there when he was 22 months old. And it's also hard to identify kiddos who might, for lack of better words, be higher functioning, right? So, and that's why, again, I'm so passionate about what Florida State's research is trying to do, is because they are trying to create a tool to use to help diagnose kiddos like Kyson earlier on. So, yeah, that's kind
of. So this has all been super recent. Like this was a few months ago, right?
It was in May. Yeah.
Wow.
It's, you know, and then you get the flip side. You get my mama heart who has been grieving, and but then you get the professional side of me who has been doing ABA with him since he was 6 months old. So like some of the things that I do with him that work really well, especially now, are warnings. Like he has got to know what's coming next. So we use like visual anchors, visual schedules, to help with that. But Kyson, so interesting thing about Kyson is, his speech pathologist just, redid an evaluation for us, and his, receptive language skills are at about a three-year-old level.
Wow.
Is like not very typical of a kiddo who has autism, but his expressive language is probably just now at maybe a 12-month-old, right? So there is a huge gap between his expressive and his receptive language, which he meets with frustration, obviously. And so he is able to understand us. So we give lots of verbal warnings. Like this morning, you know, we just started school for him, and we always go on a walk in the mornings. And I said, okay, buddy, first we're going to go on a walk, then we're going to go to school. And so I kind of prep him in that way to know what to anticipate. Sometimes it works against me just because he'll get really anxious. Like on Tuesday, I was talking about school, and we didn't have to leave until about 8:30 in the morning, and he had just woken up, and I just wanted him to know, you know, what the day was going to hold. And he heard the word school, and for the next 2 hours, he was crying. And so this morning I waited to see where he was going.
If it makes you feel any better, my toddler does the same thing with me. She's like, "What do we have?" She's like, "What do we have today?" Because that's what she always asks me every day. "What do we have?" And I like always, I'm like, "Just get dressed. Don't worry about it."
and he did better this morning. And so, right, it's just like creating a new routine. He's very routine oriented. Like we have to walk the same way on the path every single time. We have to go to the same bridge every day. You know, the same route to the store we have to take. So there's just things, you know, that he needs predictability, and we are trying to work in some flexibility. And I'm hoping that having him in school will help that. But other things, you know, like timers, if he's doing a really highly preferred activity, like water beads, or all of his highly preferred activities tend to be sensory bins. And so if I put on a timer like, okay, 2 more minutes, I might set Alexa because he loves Alexa, or I might set my phone. And then, you know, obviously like the pre-MAC principle, or also known as the grandma's rule, right? Like first we're going to do this and then this is going to come. It helps with eating because we struggle with food, meal time. And, but earlier on when Kyson was like about 6 months old, there were just things like, incidental teaching, right? Like even though he wasn't talking, I was working on his pointing, which is still communication, having him, you know, use mans in whatever way, he was able to at that point. And
explain a little bit what that looked like. So you have your 6 month old, because especially, and like explain what incidental teaching is for people that don't have ABA.
Incidental teaching, you know, I use it a ton in my classroom. So I think it just came naturally and I didn't even know I was doing it. But you just have things up high or out of reach. You know, obviously for a 6 month old, you're not going to have it like on a shelf, but maybe his favorite toy was, we were doing tummy time and I had his favorite toy straight out in front of him. And if he wanted it, right, like he's going to have to grunt or eye contact, point. He wasn't pointing it at all. So I might model it for him. Sometimes I would, you know, use a gesture for him and prompt him hand over hand, just so he started to understand, like, what is communication? How do I gain access to things? So incidental teaching really just encourages kiddos to communicate and pushes them, because if their favorite object is up on a shelf in a box, well, they have to either get you, they have to point, they have to use eye gaze, whatever modality they're working on for communication. And it's motivating, right? Like you're going to use really highly motivating items that the kiddo is going to want to request for. So, and then that comes into like, you know, using mans and everything. I wasn't necessarily manding with my 6 month old, but we were creating the foundation, right? Because I saw his communication really starting to lag behind. So I was always trying to close the gap as much as I could, or maintain the gap at where it was, so it wasn't going to continue growing in the way that, it started to. And I didn't mention, but Kyson actually, he had a little bit of a regression. He wasn't saying mama and dada, like I said, when he was one. He started saying mama a couple months later, but he would only say it to Justin during bath time, which was very interesting. And then it hit Christmas time and he wasn't saying anything. He wasn't saying mama, dada, nothing. He didn't have very many words to regress on. But that's when, after Christmas time, it was mid-January. And that's when I reached out to Florida State to do that ESAC, because just with all of the sensory needs that Kyson has had and his GI, and then, you know, his gaps in communication and some of his gross motor, I just knew, piecing all of those little pieces of information together, that we needed some guidance and some tools. And I just was not going to sit by and let Kyson, you know, not get the interventions that he deserves.
Yeah. So. And it's great that, you know, you mentioned earlier, it came from your mommy gut, but it also came from your like educator ABA brain. And I think this is great, you know, for any parents, like whether you're a teacher and just happen to have other kids, but to kind of to listen to both parts. And if you don't have the background in education, to listen to your, you know, your parent gut on, hey, something's not right. Let's not just wait and see, to take steps forward to see what's going on. Because like we said, people kind of get stuck in that wait and see kind of model.
And it definitely was my educator mind that knew we needed to push forward, because that was my biggest struggle, was I was having a battle within myself between my brain and my heart. You know, like my mommy heart didn't want to know the answer. And I think that's natural. And I think that that's okay. But the other flip side of it was, I knew my kid needed the interventions, and he is thriving. Like,
yeah. So tell me, what does early intervention look like now? You've only recently started, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we did. So we started speech as, I mean, we got home from Florida and I was on the computer researching for the best speech pathologist out there, because Justin and I, for our family, we prioritize, because there is, once you get a diagnosis, there is a lot out there. There is a lot of options for people. And for us and who Kyson is, communication was our number one goal to start with. So that's where we started. And so we, luckily through our pediatrician, it's kind of all through one system. And so he hooked us up with a variety of speech pathologists that I had kind of sifted through and landed on this one. And interesting enough, she uses the TEACH principle to do her speech sessions. And I love that. Have you ever seen that done before?
No. Can you explain it a little bit?
So she uses, so it's obviously ABA backed for those who don't know the TEACH principle. It's kind of an older ABA model, but she uses three or four plastic colored bins, and he has the choices, right? He gets to choose which bin he wants to start with. So that gives him control, because Kyson loves control of his environment, which, you know, most kiddos with ASD do. And then there's a distinct beginning, middle, and end. So let's say there are four boxes on the table. He chooses the green one first. There could be, you know, three to four activities in each box. And then he also gets to choose which activity is in the box. I have a long video on this process too, on my Instagram page, if anyone's interested at looking at it. But it's really given Kyson control of his environment, predictability, and a beginning, middle, and end, which is great for Kyson. And he, you know, and obviously the tasks in the box, she makes sure that some of them are motivating and some of them, you know, are actual, you know, might be harder for Kyson to work through. So there's a balance in the boxes too. So it's been, we've seen huge gains in Kyson's speech just in the last 2 months. And that's early intervention for you. Like, that's, we want to get these kiddos in seeing, you know, speech pathologists, OTs, PTs, feeding specialists, whatever it might be, because the earlier you get them in, as research supports and backs, the better their outcome for their future, right? Like, so it's just been, we started with speech. We did do some OC for a while, but he only qualified for sensory processing disorder, and our insurance unfortunately does not cover that. And so we stopped that, but there are some great resources online that I found. And we kind of have our own sensory gym in our house now for Kyson.
I mean, you kind of do have to like play the role of different therapists as a parent in early intervention. You're like, okay, what kind of things, you know, can I learn from when the OT did come that I can replicate? Or even, you know, speech sessions are short. Yeah. So how are you going to continue that on during the week?
Exactly. And I think that's where the task boxes, that's what we call them, that his speech pathologist does. I implemented them in home. So that's what I recorded and posted on Instagram was, you know, this tool can be utilized for parents. This tool would be awesome for everyone to use. And if I were still a teacher, I would honestly encourage my speech pathologist who I'd work with to use this tactic, just because I have seen so many gains from Kyson. He is on task. He's driven, he's motivated because he has that control piece. He has predictability and he looks forward to it. He actually, since I implemented the task boxes in home, he requests to do them. I mean, he loves it.
But that shows how, you know, like you said, the structure and all that is so important to him that he's requesting it. It's reinforcing. Yes. What is reinforcing for some of our learners isn't just like unstructured, chill playtime. Like, that's stressful sometimes. That's anxiety provoking. Yes. Instead, like, knowing what to expect. And I love that, you know, that like interdisciplinary crossover of speech and ABA is happening, because that's where you see the big gains.
Yes, exactly. And I just loved, you know, and I think that more speech pathologists are becoming BCBAs and getting to know the ABA world. And I think that it's just, it's so beneficial. And his OT, actually, I was helping her out because they don't have any ABA background. And I started giving her some pointers, and she was implementing it even with her other clients. And she was like, "You need to just come work here and train us." And I was like, "Oh, I'd love that, but I have no time right now." I think it's just beneficial, right, to get our kiddos to a point of being able to sit in a chair, to be able to stay on task for a minute, or, you know, and giving other professionals tools to also feel successful. Because if you're a professional and you don't feel successful, you're more likely to have higher burnout, exhaustion, right? Like, if you feel successful, your kiddo is going to feel successful. So,
yes. And like some of the strategies, you know, everything you've mentioned today too, seems kind of simple too. It's not like reinventing the wheel. It's just little tweaks on everything. Like, incidental teaching is something all parents do, but should just do more, because they might not even realize they're doing it. Like, oh, when my kid says cup, I go get him a cup. But make sure that the cup is usually somewhere where he has to ask for it, because he's going to ask more and more. And it's just like these little kind of tweaks of giving choices and having the routine that, when you do it purposefully, has such a big impact. So it's so cool to hear from both the, you know, clinician side and the parent side too.
Yeah. And it's been, you know, a roller coaster for me, because I'm still finding my grounding in just being Kyson's mom, but also being, you know, someone who has a lot of background in ABA and special ed. And sometimes I just need to stop being therapist and just start just having fun with him and being mom. And but it's just it often comes very natural for me. I don't even know I'm mamming with him, right?
I know.
But and again,
that when you were talking about that, it reminded me of this story. This was many, many years ago. I think this was actually before I had kids. My husband and I spent the weekend with two groups of friends, and they had similar age kids, like toddlers. And later he was like, "Oh my gosh." And the one group of friends was a lot of speech pathologists and school psychs, education people that I had known from work. And they're like, "Wow, like that group of friends, their kids all talk so much. It must be because of this, this, and this." And I was like, "No, no, no." I'm like, "I'm not trying to throw shade on the other group, but did you see that the other group of friends all chase their kids around offering things up, and the, you know, education, speech background group of friends, you know, kids were like making a noise and they're like, 'What do you want? Say carrot.' Like, 'Oh, point to what you want. Show me.'" Yep. Like, they were evoking language in a barbecue. Like, that was just how they parent. Yep. And, you know, so it's kind of funny to see. I was like, well, when you evoke language a lot more, you're going to get more language out of your kids.
Exactly. And I think that's what inspired me to create, you know, the account and website that I did.
Yes. You were like, this is perfect lead. And I was just going to ask you, so can you share a little bit about your platform that you created and what you want to do there?
So it's funny, because I created this platform before we got Kyson's diagnosis. You can say it was instinct that I knew where we were headed, but really I created the Spectrum Compass, is what it's called, to help support parents feel successful with their kids, honestly, to help them through diagnosis, to help them through early warning signs, to help them through how to get my kid to start communicating. I can't tell you how many parents, since I started this platform, have reached out. I had posted a video on PECS, Picture Exchange System, and they had no idea. Their kids were 4 and 5 years old who still were not diagnosed, not talking, and these parents were lost. I had so many messages come to me, you know, with tears of how grateful they were that I had shared this. And it makes me so passionate, because I miss what I do, right? Like, I love being Kyson's mom, but there's another, you know, I was someone else before I was mom too. And that person loved teaching. I loved, you know, teaching parents that I had worked with when I was a teacher, supporting them to support their child, because really it comes down to what the parents are doing in home. You can have all of the early intervention you want and as early as you get it, but unless you are implementing and generalizing in home, you're not going to see as great of gains as you would otherwise. So that's really why I created the platform, was just to say, hey, parents, you can do this. We got this. Let me support you in whatever ways you see fit. And obviously, I can't, you know, I oftentimes get like, well, my kid's doing this. What should I do? I can't give recommendations. That's not ethical of me. But I can give, you know, facts of this is how you create PECs. This is how I implement it with, or did implement it with Kyson. You know, and just talking behaviorally about, you know, simple things like timers, right? Like, I'm sure lots of parents use timers, but they don't know that it's ABA backed. It's an ABA principle, right? Predictability, giving choices. That's huge for our kids. If they can't verbally choose, then give them a picture. So it's just kind of modifying what parents, I think, do naturally. And maybe just like you had mentioned earlier, just doing a little bit more of it. And as parents, especially, I have a lot of parents who are recently starting the diagnosis process, just got the diagnosis, and they feel lost. So I try to help support with, like, you know, creating a task list for themselves. You know, what is the most important thing for your kiddo right now? Is it getting them into ABA? Is it starting speech? And then parents tend to have a bad taste in their mouth about ABA. And so that was the second reason why I created the platform, because I truly believe and have seen ABA come really far, even in just the past 5 years. And I wanted to kind of take the stigma of ABA and show it's not scary. It's not scary. It has, Kyson has grown tremendously from the ABA tactics that I have implemented with him. And I think seeing another parent who is implementing it with their son is encouraging, because I'm not being mean to him. I'm not forcing him, you know, like
it looks really natural. Yeah. Like your platform is very like user friendly. It's just a mom with her son working on teaching some new skills.
So it was built for that. And now it's kind of a mix of supporting parents with materials and ABA supports, as well as just sharing my journey, because that's one thing that I have found we all need. We all need those connections of other families, moms, dads, to relate to and with, to know it's okay to feel angry about a diagnosis. It's okay to feel excited, you know, relieved about a diagnosis, because I can tell you when I got that phone call, that's exactly what it was. I was excited and relieved. And it's, you know, there's no right, wrong way to feel, and to have that community of support is, I think, really important for any diagnosis, any, you know, your child's going through something. You need a community. So
yes. Well, thank you so much for creating that, because there's obviously such a need. And I think, you know, I love your perspective as a parent, and the way you explain ABA is so user-friendly and so approachable, and you're doing, you know, really great things for the field. So thank you.
You are doing great things for the field. Yeah. A mini Sasha.
and I thank you so much for sharing about the First Words Project. I hope that I will link that in the show notes, and I hope that will be helpful to people. So say your website again, thespectrumcompass.com. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And I actually have, this is good timing, a journal coming out. It's called the Grace Journal, and it's just for special abilities moms to kind of work through all things, to make time for ourselves, to start focusing on what our kids are doing instead of what they're not doing. And just, you know, being grateful, because I think that we can all get into a place as moms where, you know, it's just hard. It's a hard role. And so if anyone's
awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely check that out. We will link that as well. Well, thank you so much, Whitney. It was so fun to talk to you. I love kind of hearing this whole story.
Great. Thank you so much, Sasha.
Bye-bye. If you would have told me a few years ago that my favorite part of my job is getting up in front of sometimes a few hundred people and giving a presentation on data or behavior academics, I would have thought you were crazy. I did not always like public speaking. Actually, to be totally honest, public speaking was something I used to be pretty afraid of. But now it's literally my favorite part of my job. I love being in a room of my people, of the special ed world, teachers and parents and clinicians, and everyone that's on the front lines that's working so hard for our students to give them the best opportunities and the best classroom experience. I love being in a room of everyone that understands how hard this job can be, but also how amazing it is and how important those little victories are on a daily basis. When I do a PD, my goal is to bring value. I want to bring action items, ideas and strategies that you can do tomorrow in your classroom. I have sat through too many professional developments that either didn't apply to me or were too hypothetical and philosophical, and my special ed heart always wanted to know, what do I do next? What do I do tomorrow? If you are interested in learning more about how I can come to your school to do a professional development, please visit theautismhelper.com/speaking. There's a contact form as well as a lot of information about all of the different sessions I give. I'm happy to answer any questions and work with your school district. Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening. Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.